This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. Every weekday, News Radio 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now, the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show. From Wintergreen Nursery Landscaping and Florist, here's the Commissioner of Dirt, Mike Winters, and the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Well, hello there, Mike. Another nice day in the valley.
It's an absolute beautiful day in Douglas County. The sun is shining. There's a little bit of breeze, and it was like 68 degrees out in my truck.
Perfect.
Perfect. Yes.
Have you talked to Kyle about the intro yet of your show?
Yeah, I did twice now.
Twice?
Mm-hmm.
I see it's still the same.
Yeah. By the way, I don't own Wintergreen Nursery Landscaping and Florist anymore. I'm retired, so... if you hear that, it's not me. It's somebody else.
Now we're covered. The disclaimer.
I just disclaimed y'all. Anyway, thank you for listening today. If you have any questions about your gardens, your lawns, your trees, your shrubs, your fertilizing, watering, whatever, you can call 673-4464. Ask your question, and I will give you the best answer you ever heard in your entire life.
There you go.
That's right. And you'll probably want to call again right after you hang up.
What'd you say?
Say that again, please.
Yeah.
Okay. I got a whole bunch of different subjects today that I'm just going to run through here. Just kind of give you food for thought. And if you have, a few fruit trees in your yard, you've may noticed a late flowering, of course, this year due to the spring being somewhat delayed because of the cold, the rain, and that kind of thing. And my own fruit trees at home were slow in blooming, and I didn't see many honeybees doing any pollinating, and I thought, uh-oh, boy, this is... And then, all of a sudden, some sun and warmth brought them out, and they had flowers, and... Now, there were some bees. I kept looking at them every day. Where's the bees? Come on, I need some pollinators, quick. Well, about the second or third sunny day, I noticed there was a few bees in there doing their trick.
Cool.
And I'm thinking, well, that's good. Because obviously it worked, because now I got little tiny cherries on my cherry tree.
All right. They woke up with the sun.
Yeah, they woke up and they went, wow, we got to get busy. Mike's going to be mad at us and spray us or something.
Busy as a bee, as they say.
Yeah, busy as a bee. So anyway, so, you know, this late spring, if you will, I mean, the sun, the warmth, that kind of thing, you know, a little bit later than normal or usual or average or whatever. We may or may not have a real big fruit crop. Mm. Either commercially or residentially, you know. I go by Broside Orchards every morning. I'll take the back road in. I hate to get on the freeway or the highway real quick. So
yeah,
I go, and Broside's got apples, pears, peaches, cherries. He's got all those right there along the road, so you can see them very easily. And I kept waiting, when are these dudes going to bloom out, you know? And it wasn't until finally we got, like I say, a couple of sunny days where all of a sudden the temperature went from the high 40s to, bingo, 65, 69, 70, you know, right in there. And it was like they exploded. Bam! In about 2 days, they were just doing their tricks. So.
Funny how they know when to do it.
Yeah, I said, come on, you know, they're sitting there wondering, you know, they're rubbing their petals together thinking, what are we going to do now? I don't know, Bob. But anyway, we will have some crops. We will have some fruit. And my place, of course, like I've said in the past, I'm in a canyon, so I don't get full sun all day long. I get some morning sun, and then I get, you know, I'm in the shade by 6:15 or so on the longest day of the year.
Nice.
And and the longest day of the year is usually hot, so when the sun goes behind the ridge, all of a sudden it just cools off. It just temp drops 5 degrees, 6 degrees, and the wind starts coming up the creek. So it's like natural air conditioning.
You're privileged.
Yeah, I know. I did it on purpose too. When I built my house, here's where the breeze comes from. Let's see, what do I do?
Back in 1896. '06.
Yeah. But anyway, I'm seeing the little tiny cherries, and I saw a pear or two and a couple of apples growing. Not as much as usual, but I'll have some fruit. And I think that's going to be the kind of average things that's going to happen because of the late flowering and all that throughout the county. Maybe not so much in the commercial orchards because they're in the wide open spaces and they get, you know, sun from early morning till sunset.
Yeah.
But for folks that have more shade than sun, it's going to be a slow process. And but the commercial growers should do fairly well. It depends too on the quantity, and depending on the quantity, that depends on the price. And if there's a quote shortage, then the price is a little bit higher, of course. And but anyway, there will be a fruit crop this year, not just a great abundance of it. And that means that the price, of course, is going to be a little higher. So much for global warming. Yeah, geez Louise.
Al Gore, where are you?
Yeah, when you need him, huh? But there's a question here I wanted to pose. Have you ever thought of having an olive tree as part of your landscape? And you know, the normal thought is olive trees don't grow up in Oregon. Oh, yes, they do. I've been growing them for a few years, and there are quite a few olive groves to the north of us, and then there's one out in Glide as well.
You've been there, haven't you?
Yeah, and I revisited it the other day just to make sure, and they've increased the size. I said, you know, there was, I thought the first time I saw, you know, 5 or 6 acres or something.
Yeah.
Then I went further up the road and I got a more panoramic view of it. There's probably 20 acres, well, maybe not 20, but good 15 acres of olive trees in there.
That's a good size.
Oh, yeah, that's a lot of work, I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
But the black Spanish olive is usually just for the olive oil. You can eat them, and they taste okay. They're not bitter or bad or anything like that. But their primary use, especially in the state of Oregon, is for the olive oil. Mm. And I found, you know, olive oil, gosh, it's
expensive.
Yeah, it's expensive, and but it's kind of a health thing.
Oh, okay.
You know, and like this black Spanish olive, it you know, when I was still in the nursery business. you know, I grew quite a few of them, small ones, and I was in California years ago, oh gosh, 10 years ago, 12 years ago, at one of my son's baseball games. He was going to college down there. And you go up old 99 instead of taking I-5, and you see all these farms and fruit stands and things like that, and there was one place that had a lot of olive groves. So I stopped in there, and it was called the Olive Garden or the Olive something, and big old fruit stand kind of thing. And I went in there, and they had little olive trees in pots.
Oh, really?
You could buy.
Nice.
So I bought one.
Yeah.
And I I brought it home on purpose, and I asked a few questions about it. And said, oh, yeah, no problem. You know, it'll grow here. I thought, well, we'll see if it grows in Douglas County then. And I kept it in a pot for, oh, I think 2 years, and it was growing, and it kept it outside and kept it in a sunny location as much as possible. And then I planted it, and it did very, very well. And
great.
And as a consequence, I got a few more, and I planted them in landscaping jobs just to have a different looking tree. They have a they're kind of an open tree. They're not so full with leaves that you can't see. The leaves are very slender and long, so you can see through the tree. It's not a total blockage. It's not a privacy type tree or anything like that. And the first one I planted in a landscape was at a church landscaping, and it was probably, I don't know, 5 feet when I put it in. Now it's about 12 to 15 feet.
Wow.
And it's gorgeous, and it was
yes,
and it was loaded with olives.
Oh.
And it's doing remarkably well, and it's planted with, oh, I put some dogwoods in, and there's a maple on one end, and there's this olive tree kind of stuck in the middle of it. It looks like, whoa, you know, what is that tree? Well, it's an olive tree. Most people don't know that. They walk by it and they go, yeah, it's a strange looking tree. And then these little black fruits show up all over it, and you know,
what are those, prunes?
No, but they're miniature prunes or something like that, or big raisins, one of the two. So, but anyway, you know, you could have something like this in your yard. They do well here in Douglas County, obviously. The only problem you might have is finding them. And we grew them there in our nursery. My daughter Jill, she did cuttings, and we wanted to experiment and see if we could actually grow roots on the cuttings, and they all took.
Oh, wow.
And I think we, oh gosh, we had maybe 40 or 50 of them, and we still got probably, gosh, 15 or 20 left that are bigger now, and they're looking good. We don't sell very many of them because people are not familiar.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's more like an exotic.
It takes them a while to grow.
Yeah, they're not, excuse me, they're not real fast at all.
Yeah.
But once they're established, they kind of pick up the momentum. And if they've got a lot of open space and a lot of sunshine, they do very, very well.
I like that.
Yeah, and they're not, you know, quote, a shade tree, but they're a real exotic-looking tree. They're different than anything else around. And then when the flowers, little white flowers, and it's not real showy, but it's still pretty. And then that's with the olives, when the flowers, that's the olives coming out, and they're self-fertile, so the bees, whatever they do, they fertilize the from flower to flower, and
they do
everything. Yeah, they do. They bite you. They fertilize. They stick on your windshield. You know.
Pesky things sometimes.
Yes, they can be pesky. I've had some real good. I went on a ranch we lived on one time. I was about 15 or 16 years old. And this flatbed truck pulls into our ranch yard, and there's two guys in it, and they said, is this where Mike Witters lives? And my mother said, yeah, he's right over there. He says, we'd like to hire him to help us load some hives next door. The guy next door, there was probably 50 acres of alfalfa, and they always put beehives down there next to the alfalfa fields because they were the main pollinizers for the alfalfa. Yeah, so I go down there. Sure, I'll do that. And, you know, bee box this big.
I hope you got paid.
Oh, yeah, I got paid. I didn't work for free. It was some of the hardest work I ever did, though, because I can't remember now. It was either the bottom box or the top box. It was three boxes high, and you had to take. It was a bottom box, and you had to take the two off the top and pick up the bottom. That's where all the honey was, most of the honey was.
By then, they're ticked.
Well, they're buzzing, I'll tell you what. Yeah. But you got this hazmat suit on that nothing can get through. You can't even hardly breathe, for crying out loud. And it's got a little screen right here in the front where you breathe through. And one of the guys says, whatever you do, don't spit. Well, I forgot.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. And so for the most of 3 hours, I had to look at my spit in front of my eyes because it didn't go through the little screen. I wasn't thinking. I was sweating like a.
Yeah.
Oh, man, it was hot.
It smelled good, too.
Oh, yeah. But there's these a million bees flying around you, and you're loading them on this flatbed truck. And I think, I don't know. We worked, probably 4 hours or 5 hours. And I was in good shape when I was 16.
Yeah.
And from working on a ranch all the time. But, man, that tuckered me out. And then we take off our suits. And the bees, they're still there. And we're taking our suits off to get in the flatbed truck. And they're driving me back to my place. And there's, 20, 30 bees on the inside buzzing around. The windows are open. There's bees all over. And this several bees were on the steering wheel. And this guy's steering the truck. And I'm thinking, we're going to get in a wreck for sure. And he says, don't move, just sit calm. Yeah, right, sit calm. They're crawling all over you, you know, and on the dashboard and on the windshield, and you're going to sit there calmly. But these guys did it for a living. They knew what they were talking about. So I just held my breath and prayed a lot. Don't bite me, please. But honeybees are really good for pollinizing. I'll tell you what, they are the yeah, they do well. We got a break?
We do.
Okay, we'll be back. Yes, and you can call 673-4464 if you want to answer a question. Ask a question.
News Radio, 93.9 FM at 1240 KQAM.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
And we're back. We got a call right now. Hey, good afternoon. You're on the air with Mike Winters.
Yeah, Mike, this is Dan. I have a question about wood ash, you know, from wood stoves.
Right.
If that's good for plants, I heard it is.
It is, but you wouldn't want to plant anything just straight in the wood ash. You want to mix it with the original soil.
Okay, so don't put it full strength.
No, full strength. About, you know, 10-20% maybe of the wood ash, and then just mix it in really thoroughly so it's not clumped up or anything, and it's thoroughly mixed, and then you can plant, and it's good for whatever you're growing.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Well, you're welcome. That was an easy question. I like that.
Okay. Right. Bye now.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Reminds me of Mount St. Helens when it exploded. There must have been a lot of ash up there killing plants.
Oh, they had a lot of ash. I was there when it exploded.
Oh, good. Wow. We'll have to get into that.
I was at a meeting right on the Columbia River there. What?
We got a phone call.
Another one?
Whoa. We got another one. Whoa. Hey, you're on the air with Mike Winters.
We're on a roll.
Yeah, Mike. Hey, I had a real quick question on my honeysuckle.
Yeah.
I've been having problems with it, like the leaves turning yellow and then some of them getting brown spots. I was wondering, is that a fungus? And my other question was, what would be the best fertilizer to use? I was using Miracle-Gro, but maybe I need to use something else.
Miracle-Gro is a liquid form.
The powder that you put in with the sprayer.
And then it mixes with the water and you put it on it.
Do you
spray the leaves and everything?
I try not to.
Okay. And how often is it well watered, or is it not watered much, or how do you water it?
It's well watered. I've got soaker hoses in it.
Mm-hmm. It might be getting too much water. How often do the soaker hoses go on?
I do it like maybe 2 or 3 times a week.
Yeah, that's too much.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, back off on that. That's why when the leaves start to yellow like that, do the leaves also kind of get looking crispy on the ends?
Some of them do, and then some of them are just real, they're just real pale.
Yeah.
The reason what had happened was we were gone, you know, that week that when it got 95.
Oh, yeah.
We were gone those 2 days, and then we came back, and, I mean, the thing got fried, and so then I clipped it back because
uh-huh.
I had talked to somebody else, and they said clip it back,
oh, yeah.
You know, the dead stuff, so I did, and it's coming back, but then I still have some. So I didn't know if it had a fungus on it because I was looking up at my book and trying to figure that out. So.
Well, if you had a fungus on it, you're just going to kind of – take some of the leaves and look underneath the leaf, and if there's a bug or something on there, you'll see it on the underside of the leaf where the sun doesn't get it. And,
okay,
if you see something like that, you can also soak it with a fungicide in water too. You know, just water it in like you were watering the plant, and the fungicide goes up through the shrub.
Okay, so you think I'm wandering it too much?
I think so, yeah.
Okay.
Do the soil test with your fingers. Go ahead and dig down there, and if it feels real wet to you, you know that's the answer.
Okay, great. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call.
Bye.
All righty. Getting back to your Mount St. Helens story.
Yeah, Mount St. Helens. I was there the day it exploded.
Oh,
my wife and I were there at a meeting, and we're right in one of those.
Must have been an explosive meeting.
Well, it was.
That was a poor joke.
I know it was, but that's okay. I ignore that. I didn't even know that it exploded. I didn't hear a boom or anything.
Mm.
But as I normally do when I get up, and you know the shades, the drapes or whatever on the window were closed, and I opened the drapes. And I looked down, I couldn't believe it. Everything was gray.
Oh, Lord.
As far as you could see, there was gray ash everywhere. And I thought, whoa, what happened?
Jeez.
And then, for some reason, within the next few minutes, I caught on that Mount St. Helens, whatever, had exploded. And that was the ash from the explosion. And it was just,
wow. It
was weird. Everything was gray. The streets, the cars, the trees, the shrubs, the buildings, everything was gray with ash. And we were leaving, within the hour, headed back home from this thing. And the roads were slicker than snow. It was like ice. And because there was a little bit of rain associated with it, and
it is the Pacific Northwest.
Yeah, and it just made it like ice. It was just your tires were spinning, and everybody got smart and drove slow, especially on I-5. But as soon as you got a few miles out of Portland, the ash was minimal. But you could still see pockets of it because it traveled a long way. Yeah.
Time you got to Albany, it was probably okay.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, Eugene.
Yeah.
But it was something. I mean, whoa, what is this? The world turned gray while I was asleep.
What's the word? Apocalypse?
Yeah, the apocalypse. Well, you never know.
We get it.
Yeah.
I think.
Okay. All right. And in my travels, and I've said this before, I discovered by mistake one day, I was up on Lone Rock Road up in Glide. You get to the end of Glide, and before you cross the North Umpqua, there's a bridge, and there's a little road that goes to the side, to the right, and goes along the river. And mostly residential's down through there with a few acres here and there, and it's Lone Rock Road. And there's a favorite swimming place, so a little BLM park and a little beach in the summer. It's really nice, and nobody goes there because nobody knows it's there, basically.
Now they do.
Now they do, but, back in the day, they didn't. So one day, and this was probably, 2 years ago maybe, I thought, I'll go down here. I haven't been to the end, or is there an end, or where does it maybe turns into BLM. And I drove down another 2 miles, and bingo, there was, what was it called? Oh, gosh. Something River Grape Arbor.
Hmm.
Or so, I tried
to draw on a blank.
Yeah. Anyway, there was acres and acres, not grapes, acres and acres of olive trees. Acres. And so I went back up there the other day because I was writing about the olives and stuff, and I thought, I want to go see that again. So I drove on up there and looked at it. And it's been expanded since my first trip up there. And I'd say there's a good 15 acres at least of olive trees, and they look really great. They're beautiful trees. And they sell mainly olive oil, I understand, and other things that are made with the with olive oil.
Olive,
might be hand creams, or it's a medicinal. It's been used medicinally for ages, clear back way back,
and it's actually legal.
Yeah. And it is actually legal. You had me going there for a minute, though. But you can go down that, Lone Rock Road and see it. There's a big gate there, and I think they've got a buzzer or something. You can buzz there, and they'll open the gate, and you can drive down there to their refinery, whatever they call that in the olive business. And talk to them, and I'm sure they've got different olive oil for sale and things like that. But it's really, really pretty because the leaves are kind of a blue-gray. They're not green. Mm. They're blue-gray, and like I said, they're long and thin, probably 2 to 3 inches long and then half an inch wide. And it's a very exotic-looking tree. And clear up there in Glide, where it gets colder and snowier and wetter and all that than it does here in the Roseburg vicinity, and they're doing great. That's how tough these trees are.
Jeez.
Like I say, they're a very, very pretty tree. But you can drive up there and take a look at them and see what you think. And they're, of course, they're not in full sun. I mean, they've got probably... No, in the summer, maybe 7-8 hours of sun. Whereas if you were out in the flatlands out here, you'd have maybe 12-13 hours of sun, something like that.
They probably get the water from the...
They got a good water source. North Umpqua is just right there. It just goes right on by. But I don't know how to produce olive oil. But one of these days, I intend to actually go there with some time to visit with the owner, to talk to him and get educated on, what his process is and how you do it and that kind of thing. And the other cool thing about that is I got a daughter and grandchildren live south of Austin, Texas, about 25 miles out in what they call the Hill Country. There are a lot of ranches and that kind of thing. And it's amazing how many olive groves they grow down in that area
in
of Texas. Yeah.
I'll be darned.
And it's drier.
Yeah.
Hotter. Sometimes colder in the winter. They get snow down there.
Yeah, it's weird weather down there.
It is. It's extreme on both ends.
Yes.
When it's hot, maybe it's hot. And when it's cold, it's cold.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
There's not a lot in betweens, but they grow all the same type of olive tree I saw here, I saw in Texas.
Wow.
Yeah. So
that is a little odd.
Whoa. Big groves. I mean, acres and acres of this stuff. So it's a thriving business here in the United States. And I don't know.
Oil down there in Texas must be good to them.
Yeah, I think so. Olive oil. But the olive tree has been, you know, around for many years. And evidence of the oil production goes back 6,000 years when I was doing my research on there. And the trees are a symbol of peace and unity, and some say sacred. And it's said that King David of the Bible had guards to protect his olive groves and his warehouses because it was such a valuable trading commodity back in the day. You know, they didn't have, you know, dollar bills and things like that. They had coins, but they traded goods, too. They bartered with goods, and apparently the olives and the olive oil was high on the
list
of, you know, the valuable assets that if you had, you were rich and you could trade and get that done. So they got the fruit and the oil of the trees, and so it's the oil from the olives was used like an anointment for the dead. When they had a dead person, they did something, they anointed their body.
Oh, so that's the term, the anointing oil.
Yeah, could be. Hmm. Yeah. And they've manufactured a perfume and soap as well from olive oil.
Hmm.
Yeah. And I thought, well, this is cool. And it's been it said that in the article I was reading, in the research I did, the olive oil has been associated with power, wealth, and nobility dating back thousands of years. When you had a olive grove, baby, you were big stuff.
You were it.
You were the Kenneth Ford of the area, you know, that kind of thing. So.
Speaking of which, we got to make some money.
Okay.
We'll be right back with more.
All right.
Olive oil, and maybe Popeye will pop in.
Well, you never know.
You never know. What's our number, Mike?
673-4464 if you have a call.
93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Hey, 439 and 70 degrees. What do you think of that, Mike?
I think 70 degrees is the best degrees in the world.
Ah.
You know, the sun is shining, and you know, driving here today, I had my window down, and just it was almost kind of cold, so I put a long sleeve shirt on and still have the window down.
Oh, that's perfect.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
I got the best of both worlds that way. And I thought, I could stand a whole summer like this.
Oh, yeah.
You can take that 99-degree stuff and send it to Boston or
I thought you were
going to
say Biden.
Yeah, well, yeah, Washington, D.C. would be the place, too.
Let's get back on track.
Yeah, you're leading me astray here. But every year, I buy a copy of the Old Farmer's Almanac, and this is it's really a cool book. It has a lot of just very interesting reading, articles on gardening and weather predictions, and these weather predictions are very accurate. I don't know how they do it, but they pretty much nail it. We got a call?
We do.
Okay, we'll take the call.
Hey there, you're on the air with Mike Winters.
Oh, awesome. Hey, this is Gary. Love your show.
Thank you.
I got a question on clover.
Yes.
I've been trying to kill this clover in my grass for years, just using weed and feed.
Mm-hmm.
And it just does not go away. It kind of like makes it dormant for a little bit, but it still is there. So, do you have anything for me?
So is this in a lawn?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Well, how large is the lawn, would you say? What are
Excuse
some,
me?
How large is the lawn area? How big is
it's pretty large. It's kind of spotty. Mm-hmm. It'll grow in spots. But, yeah, I've been using just weed and feed, and it just doesn't seem to go away.
Well, it's a very tough thing to get rid of. One thing you might consider, now this is not a solution really, but one thing you might consider is just leave it there and mow it. and you know, it's part of your landscape. But if you try to get rid of it, are you in a neighborhood or are you out?
Yes, residential.
Okay,
yeah.
Residential area. So do other people have the same problem in your area? Do you see it?
Well, it's funny. I got one neighbor full of weeds and the other neighbor just put in nice sod.
Uh-huh.
And I have that, I called a couple weeks ago. I have that clay dirt.
Yeah.
You know, and you told me to aerate it and thatch and plug it. I haven't done that yet. But I'd give you a shout on clover.
Well, you know, it's so difficult to get rid of.
I've heard that.
Yeah, and you can spray it, but there are some spray. It has to be a broadleaf spray because it's a broadleaf plant. And you might go to the co-op and talk to one of the guys there at the co-op as to what kind of spray they've had the best success with as far as getting rid of it. I've got it at my place, too. And I've not even,
oh, do you?
Yeah, I haven't even tried to get rid of it. I live out in the boondocks, but you know, I just mow it and it blends and I'm used to it, so it doesn't bother me. And you know, nobody looks at it. But go to the co-op and ask the spray guy in there. Mark is his name, and he there, you know, because they got several brands of this stuff on the shelves, and you read the label and you go, oh yeah, right, I'll try this or I'll try that. But he should know, you know, what is the best bet to take care of that clover if it's really heavy, and you may have to start totally over. You may have to kill the whole darn thing. I mean, kill it dead, grass, clover, everything, and spray it two or three times this summer, and then keep it to bare ground, and then put in a brand new lawn next year. And and then you
that's
can
kind of what I was
yeah
kind of what I was figuring.
I've not found a real good solution to it yet, and you know, I've seen it for 50 years, for crying out loud.
Okay, thanks, Mike.
Okay, you're welcome. Thank you for the call.
Alrighty, what is clover classified as? Is it a weed or?
It's, I don't know. When it's in our lawns, it's a stinking weed.
Weed.
But I'm not sure.
I never really thought about it. I just see it. Well, there it is.
But there, the good qualities of clover is that it adds a lot of nitrogen to your soil when it does go through its life cycle and dies.
Oh, okay.
So in that respect, it's good.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, when you buy, let's say you buy a sod, you know, get sod and put a nice sod lawn in. Excuse me. If you haven't prepped the soil properly beforehand, there's clover seed in the soil.
Ooh.
So you roll out your brand new sod, and it looks good the first year. It's just beautiful. You watered it, you fertilized it, and all that time. Well, over the course of that year, that clover seed that's been in there or even next door starts to blow in a little bit or germinate a little bit and begins to be part of your new lawn. And if you don't catch it early and you finally look at it one day and say, gosh, look at all the clover, it's a hard job to get rid of.
Mm.
And because it's so invasive, on the plus side is, like I say, it adds nitrogen to the soil when it dies down and goes through its life cycle.
Yeah.
So it enriches the soil, but it also takes over the lawn. So, you know.
That is strange. Like I said, I never really thought about it being a problem.
Yeah. And it has actually little flowers and stuff in it, too.
Oh, does it?
Yeah.
Dad always cut them down so low, I never got to see them.
Well, that's one way of getting rid of it, but it also, that doesn't enhance your lawn by cutting it so short.
No, it doesn't.
Because what happens then, when you cut your lawn so short to get rid of the clover, other weeds can take root in your lawn because now there's room and the lawn is at a weakened condition, and consequently you get other subjects to deal with.
Those sticky weeds, those thorny things.
Yeah, those nice things. Barefoot, they're fine.
Oh, whoa, you. Lord have mercy. I've stepped on many of them in my misspent youth.
Yes, I know. Well, as long as you don't do it in your misspent...
Elderly
age.
No.
Then they really hurt.
Whoa.
And the neighbors will say, "What that man screaming about, honey? I don't know. But he's jumping around in his yard screaming."
Trying to hold his foot.
Yeah, trying to hold his foot in his mouth. Anyway, I don't even know where I was going, other than the articles in the old Farmer's Almanac. And they've got articles on gardening, weather predictions, like I said, very...
Another call.
Okay.
Hey there, you're on the air with Mike Winters.
Hi, Mike. Oh, let me turn my radio down.
Thank you.
Woo.
Well, okay. Well, it didn't go off.
No, it's still there.
There we go. Okay, the gentleman that called about the clover in his yard.
Yeah.
Anyway. His yard sounded like what mine used to be, clay soil and all. And so I had this stuff, and it just like crawls all through your grass.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would use the weed and feed, and just like he said, it would die back a while, and then it would be back.
Yeah.
So I started using the weed and feed, and right after I did that, I had like the ortho weed be gone.
Mm-hmm.
So I mixed that up, and then I just kind of went and sprayed over it, and I got rid of it.
And that did it, huh? That's good.
Yeah.
I hope that gentleman's listening.
Yeah, so he might try that, and if he does, good luck for him.
Well, good. Well, thank you for telling me that. I appreciate it.
Uh-huh. Appreciate it. I love your program.
Well, thank you. Thank you for listening.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
All righty, it takes us right into our last break here. News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. Our phone number,
673-4464. I love the calls. Keep them coming.
Yeah, thank you.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All righty, let's go right to the phones. You're on the air with Mike Winters.
Great, thank you. This is Blair Bailey calling, Mike.
Yes.
Good to hear from you, Mike. I was curious, what fertilizer would you use on newly planted sod lawn? It's been planted for about 2 months.
Oh, Lily Miller is probably one of the better products, Lily Miller Lawn Food, and
okay.
It's a slow-release type fertilizer, and it also has trace elements in it, not only nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium, but also has iron, boron, manganese, and a couple others there that I can't remember.
Sounds good. And how often would you recommend fertilizing?
How new is the lawn?
about 2 months.
Oh yeah, I would go every 6 weeks or so.
Okay.
But super. You're going to be mowing a lot.
That's all right. Spall on.
Okay, all good. Right. And
thanks, Mike. I appreciate it. Yes.
And one thing too is water. When you get done fertilizing, water immediately for at least 20 minutes, a half hour, just to get the process started and get it down into the root systems.
Got it. Okay. Good. Okay. More 20 minutes. Got it. Okay. Million. Thanks, Mike. Thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Appreciate
Thank
it.
You for the call.
Bye bye.
Alrighty, that opens up the lines, which the number is
673-4464. I'm gonna quit saying that. People are calling.
No. Shame on you.
I know. That's good. I love the calls. It's good. And every call is important, and as much as I know, I don't know it all. So sometimes I might stumble and give you the wrong information. You'll have to forgive me because your grass will grow too far, too fast, too green, too
or
whatever.
Kill it.
Or kill it, yeah. Well, I tried to give the guy with the clover a way to kill his clover, but I couldn't.
True, yeah.
And then the next caller told us what she did.
There,
you know. It was great. But anyway, I was getting around. We only got a few more minutes here, but I'll just kind of get into the Old Farmer's Almanac. It's a great book. It's very interesting reading. It got, like I said, articles on gardening, weather predictions for the United States and all the zones in the United States. And I might add, those are very accurate predictions. I always look up Oregon's and we're in zone whatever. And it says, and it goes from January all the way till December and tells you, how hot, how cold, how wet, how rainy, how snowy, whatever. And they're very, very close. And they've been doing it for, a ton of years. I'm not
sure.
Since
Joe Biden was born.
Well, before that even. They're very accurate, and sometimes they miss the boat, but not often.
Not very much.
Yeah, but it covers when the one in the Pacific Northwest covers like from Seattle south to Eureka, California, and as far east as the Cascades and the Sierra Nevada Mountains, and like the prediction for April was temperature 51 degree average, precipitation 2 inches. And that was from the 1st of April to the 7th. And then a few showers and cool from the 8th to the 15th. And then sunny and warm the 16th through the 18th. And then went back to showers and mild on the 19th through the 27th. There was a few showers with mild temps. And then from the 28th to the 31st, rainy periods and a little chilly. And that was pretty accurate of what we actually had. And they're predicting this from some formula that they invented, in the 1800s.
Much for that climate stuff.
Yeah, really. I mean, they're right on, man. So, since I keep close track of weather, the almanac, like I said, is almost always right on. And it was for April, so that's why I wanted to just relay those.
Yeah.
So my question is, how does the media, the newspapers, the radio, the TV, come up with forecasts that aren't even close or accurate? I mean, where does that information originate? And I know it doesn't originate in this radio station, but they get the information from
satellite
or somewhere else.
Yeah.
And they say this is it, and the low is this and high, and it's going to be rainy or it's going to be cloudy or foggy. And most of the time, that's not right.
Mm-hmm.
And,
that's true.
And I'm thinking, the almanac is writer, more correct, right?
Yeah.
Not writer, but more correct.
I knew what you meant.
Yeah, and I'm thinking, where do they get this stuff? I mean, buy an almanac and read what that has to say, and it's fun to read, and there's lots to learn, and there's always a whole bunch of articles on gardening. And you can get them, any bookstore or any shelf mostly has them, and they come out month to month. Year to year. No, it's year to year. But it has so many different articles about, how to grow tulips in the Arctic Circle, for crying out loud, and successfully. And then tells you about the weather patterns and why certain things happen. And it gives you a real understanding of what's going on in the weather, in the world, and that kind of thing. And temperatures here and there and everywhere. It's just interesting stuff. So if you're bored and you want something something kind of cool to read, try the almanac.
How do they do that?
I don't know. But there's a historical piece in the front of each magazine that says it started in, 18 whatever,
yeah.
and Joe Almanac began this thing or whatever his name was. and it kind of goes down through the process, and there's a lot of different articles. They'll tell you how to grow green peppers on an iceberg or, all kinds of stuff. But I always pay attention to the weather forecast because they do the whole United States, and they have all the entire country in zones, and then you go through the pages and you, like I think Oregon's zone 13 or something like that.
Yeah.
And then that's on page whatever, and you read about it, and it's actually like I say from about Seattle to down into Northern California, and along the coast, not the coast but up to the Cascades where because over the Cascades it's a different region,
different
climate.
Yep.
It's high desert and it's colder and snowier and less rain but more snow. That kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's right on. It's amazing how accurate they are. But like I said, there's always good articles on gardening. How old fashioned this is and that is, and gives you recipes for fertilization or I've tried a few and they seem to work.
Do they?
Yeah.
Nice.
But from my experience in working outside all my adult life, I believe the summer growing season is going to be a great one. No heat waves or droughts, I believe. And it's going to be a mild summer in which yards and gardens will thrive and be productive. And I don't think there's going to be any or not many 100-degree-plus days.
Mm.
But there'll be a few cool days and some showers throughout the summer, and I've seen it before. So I will end my program with that.
I've even seen it rain on the 4th of July.
I did, too. 1/4, we had a picnic going on at our place, and it poured.
Ugh.
I mean, it just came down in buckets, man, all day long.
Thunder and lightning and all the good
stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, all that stuff. Goodbye. Thank you for listening.
I haven't said China, so there we go.
There you go.
See you next week.
All right.
Stay tuned now for the afternoon report coming up on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.